For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show. This is 2018 and I'm Tim Fuel, back for a new year and more news, insight and wonderment from the grassroots levels of the beautiful game. Back to join me via the power of the internet, former manager of Hendon, Harrow Borough, AFC Wimbledon, etc. Mr. Dave Anderson, good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Tim. Happy New Year to you and other listeners.
Is it a Happy New Year so far? How was the festive season for you?
Yeah, really good. I actually went and watched Harrow Hendon Boxing Day. Two of my old clubs, funny enough. So it was an odd one. I didn't know who to support. I know both managers well. But Hendon won it. It would have to be said comfortably in the end. But good fun, yeah. Enjoyed it, Tim.
And was that the only game you took in then? There seemed to be quite a few off with the weather and everything like that.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it was the only one I got to see. Hendon again. Gary has built a side that looks like it's going to the playoffs. That's for sure. And as I haven't seen him for a while, so they've got a front player who played wide other side, whose name escapes me. Gary will be delighted, but when I find out who it is, he'd be my next tip to be in the football league. He looked a real handful on the day. But it was good, and a couple of beers with both the managers after the game. Well, more than a couple, a few. And it was, it was decent. And again, the old one about 3G pitches versus grass pitches, I got to see Harrow's pitch, to be fair. Not just Harrow's pitch, as we said, Tim. A lot of games off. Harrow done well to get the game on, but it was very heavy. And it's just got that time of year again when you think that, you know, if the 3G is up to spec, that you're nearly going to get a better spectacle on it.
Well, no, we're going to talk to about the FA VARs later. And massive games at this time of the season, and if you through no fault of your own, if you can't get your pitch right, you've almost got one hand tied behind your back, or you're certainly losing that home advantage. Maybe if your home pitch isn't quite up to scratch.
Yeah, and you know, someone who managed Hendon at Claremont Road, and it was renowned for being a poor surface, and I wouldn't try and defend it. It was a quagmire at times. It can affect your season. We tried to make an advantage to our players because we knew what it was. And, you know, I used to say to lads, I've just seen the opposition arriving and they don't fancy it. You know, even if I didn't see them, I would say that, you know. But as the game progresses, I do feel that for non-league at our level now, 3G, I'm not saying everyone should be 3G, but it is a good option.
Well, as we said, many a postponement, but there's still been plenty of things going on. Going back to pre-Christmas, we did feature Wembley FC and their trademark dispute with the Football Association, and we're still trying to get to the bottom of that one. But we do have a statement from the FA that reads, "This is not about Wembley FC's logo or brand. We have never objected to their use of this logo in the UK or elsewhere, nor, despite what has been reported, have we any interest in acquiring their logo or brand. Instead, this case is about Wembley FC registering their logo in several countries outside of the UK, such as Russia, China and the US, and then refusing to coexist with us in those countries. The FA was therefore forced to find a way to prevent their mark blocking out in those territories. We have not asked and will not ask Wembley FC to pay the cost to date." So it's still a bit of sticks and stones from both parties and throwing statements at each other and blame. And we'll keep probing that one, because at the moment, the only winner appears to be the bank accounts of the lawyers and certainly not football.
Yeah, and part of me sort of thinks, you know, why have Wembley Football Club registered their logo in different countries? I'm not sure. I mean, I've managed nearly every other team in the area except Wembley, and I don't remember any other chairman going, yeah, we've registered a logo outside of the country. So I don't know what that's about, and I know we had Bran on, and maybe we should have asked him that. But
I think he was suggesting that it was from the time when Budweiser were one of their they did that TV program and sponsorship with all the celebrities, and it was something that they did, yes, without their knowledge. So maybe it does appear to be a bit of sixes and sevens, and you know, six of these,
it does,
half a dozen,
yeah.
And so I will keep probing it, because it's important that, you know, we find out what the story is, because if clubs and the FA have a dispute, at whatever level, if they can't sit around a table and talk, then we've probably got an issue. And that's always been a thing for me, that the FA are almost like our, certainly for non-league, almost like the union that we have, and the arbiter of facts, and so they're in control of everything. And you know, maybe that's where the FA needs to look at itself and maybe split out, and or, you know, we've had attempts for the Non-League Footballers Association to try and give a voice to non-league football and that. But yeah, that's where it becomes a bit difficult, because you don't really want to be taking on the guys that are the final arbiter of every decision anyway, do you? And you don't want to upset the FA, because you know, they hold all the power and all the keys.
Yes, and should then act accordingly, take the moral high ground, get Wembley in, discuss the issue, and try their best to resolve it. I just feel when you come up against the FA that they take, how can I word this? They sort of fight fire with fire every time. It's a bit like, no, hang on a minute. We're in charge. We'll do it. Sometimes I think that they need to be a little bit softer in their approach to listen to what Wembley have to say, understand what the issue that Wembley have, I say Wembley Football Club, have with what's happening, and try and take the moral high ground to resolve it. I think too many times with the FA in these sort of situations, they cut you down and go, right, now, that's it. Boom, job done. We'll decide. Someone has to make the final decision. I just think they could be softer in their approach to coming to that decision, if that makes sense.
Well, hopefully, we'll have the opportunity next week, if all pans out well, or in the coming weeks, to actually put some questions to the FA. So that's what we're trying to set up for a forthcoming show, because there's lots going on with the restructure and things like that. So it'll be nice to actually have...
Sorry, Tim, what I was going to say is, the one thing I would say, you know, I've sort of just hammered it, but at least they've made a statement. At least they've made something public that we can read and we can try and guess into what their view of this is. They don't always do that. I think that they're a PR nightmare myself, you know, but to themselves. But at least they've made a statement, and we can read it and get out of it what we can. But hopefully they'll get a spokesman available for this issue and others.
Well, certainly in my dealings with them, at times they are changing. They are a more modern thinking, or maybe they're just a more thinking organisation nowadays. So hopefully we can, you know, get them on and work a bit closer with them even. And, you know, maybe some suggestions can come through from some of the listeners as to how we can shake up the non-league game and make it a better game for us all to watch and enjoy, and, you know, all the politics and things like that. Now, it's almost turned into a show about statements, but elsewhere, another story we covered just before the year was out was a return to management by Craig Edwards at Ware FC. And when he spoke to us, you know, he spoke to you and I, Dave, and he sounded very positive about long-term plans there. And then in the last few days, Steve Newing has resigned as manager at Cheshunt United, just down the road, and Craig Edwards has been appointed in his place. Now, it doesn't appear to be very amicable. I've not spoken to Craig about this, but on the Ware website, their statement is, it has been confirmed that Craig has left as manager of Ware to take on the job at Cheshunt after Steve Newing's departure from Theobalds Lane. It is, of course, an understatement to say that it is a disappointment. Craig had been in the post for less than a month and had started to build a side clearly capable of recovering our lost position in the table. His departure will risk destabilising that side, and although rules are such that he cannot easily take those players with him, retaining them at Woodson Park may become more difficult in an atmosphere of uncertainty. So, it doesn't sound like Ware are best pleased, but do you think it's just a better offer for Craig?
Well, listen, they're both 10 minutes from each other, so it's not about journey. Ware are above Cheshunt in the league. In fact, Cheshunt are bottom, so it's not about a better league positioning. So if you go to both grounds, and to be fair, I ain't been to Cheshunt for a long time, but Ware is the better stadium. I'd have to say that from what my memory serves me. So what does that point to? It points to budget and wages for me. It points to, and this is all guessing, you know, on what's in front of me. It's pointing to, well, two things. It's pointing to the fact that there's been a complete down quickly of Craig's relationship with the chairman and the board at Ware. So That's one thing where it's just turned out it wasn't what he thought. The only other option then is better budget, better wages, and better deal for Craig. I can't between anything else. What else could it be? So it's, for me, it's one of those two things. I have spoke to Craig away, you know, sometimes when it's been the very odd time or privately, but I haven't, or I would tell you I had. But I have to say, someone sort of put it on Twitter the other day, and I was really shocked. I had to read it twice. You know, one of them, you go, really? Is that, what's happened there then? So it's a real shock to me, because he's, I don't think he's a guy that norm, that's not his, his normal behavior. And I think if Craig's moved for a better budget and a better financial deal for himself, then, you know, I'm a football manager and I have to respect that. But I also would understand where being absolutely fuming.
I think
what's happened. But last thing for me, for boards and chairmen, when they bring in new managers, maybe just get them contracted quickly. And then this doesn't come up.
Well, that was the point I was going to make. You know, fans and you know, people that are involved with the clubs, they have to realise that it's your job, isn't it? Yeah, being the manager of a football club, it's your job. You might have another job that actually pays the bills elsewhere, but when you're a football manager, that's the one thing. That's first and foremost. You know, sometimes even to detriment of your family. You know, it is important that they're happy and that they feel secure as well.
Yes, it is. Is it all about money? No, it's not all about money, but does money play a part in it? Money plays a part in everything. You know, any job that anybody has or anything that anyone's doing to do with sport or their own personal plumber, electrician, whatever you may be, money is part of that because you work for it. And look, managers work hard, and I hyped on all the time about how difficult the job is and how hard they work. And it's all true. So Craig's quite within his rights, if he's not contracted, to take a better offer. Is it strange? It's absolutely strange that this happens within sort of a month of him going to a new club. And I'd like, maybe we should get Craig on and ask him, but I'd like to know what it is. But if you're asking me to guess what it is, it's only two things. One is there was a complete breakdown of the relationship between the chairman and Craig. And it, you know, whatever was promised wasn't given, or I don't, stuff like that. Or hasn't it got on, said, Steve Newman's resigned. We want you. Here's what the deal is. Craig looks at it and goes, much better offer him off. He's entitled to do that because that's what contracts are about, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
In the contract, he can't do it.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get hold of Craig or find out exactly what's gone on there. Now, what about coming into a club as a new manager and then finding that your star striker that you've really liked the look at in the couple of training sessions you've had has then been sold to a football league club? Another big appointment in our absence was former Gloucester City manager Tim Harris. He's been given the first team job at Southern Premier Redditch United after Darren Byfield's departure, literally just before Christmas. But his task has been made a little tougher with a departure this week to Port Vale of Dior Angus. And he netted 17 goals in 23 appearances already this season, but he can't be part of Tim's plans anymore.
No, and imagine Tim would have been aware of that. Surely would have been aware that of Port Vale's sort of interest. And you know, it sounds like the deal was more or less done at the same time Tim came in. But I'm sure he would have been aware of it. Can he replace him? Very difficult. You know, I just spoke to, I was going to nearly say his name there, but I can't because the deal hasn't been done. But I spoke to another friend of mine in non-league who was talking about the January window, that they think they're going to lose a player and going to be difficult to replace him. And this is the same instance. When one of your better players goes out the door, you can always sign someone else. But you'd be a fool to think that you can just click your fingers and find another guy who scores, well, not a goal a game, but not a kick in the backside off a goal a game. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be, it will be a little bit more difficult for him. But I'm sure he was aware of it. him, you know.
But I mean, it is also nice to see that, you know, there's another player making a step up to the pro game a bit later on in his career. I think he's still only in his early 20s, but, you know, he's been able to make that step up, and that's from what, Southern Prem.
Yes, and we've said it, and we continue to say it, and people are catching on that there are little nuggets of gold hanging around non-league. Always have been, always will be. It's about, and to be the pro sides now, have scouts everywhere. You know, Port Vale, you know, you look at Port Vale and you think, you don't think them of being a massive football club, but they will have their scouts out, and they've got in, taking them early and taking the chance early. But it's the one sort of bittersweet thing as a manager, you know, and I've had it where as much as you hate to see your best players going out the door, part of you is delighted for them because you only get one go at this career. And, you know, and the ones that I've had, and I don't mean I've sold them all into professional football, but who've gone on to play at a higher level, and made a sort of career at the top end of semi-pro or in the professional game. When you bump into them again, they never forget, not so much what you did, but their time in non-league and what it meant to them. So it's still brilliant. It's still living the dream. I think there'll be a lot more of it because the way forward for me over the next sort of 10 years with these, the sort of under 23s and the under 19s at professional level, where I don't think you play real football, if I'm being blunt. It's testimonial stuff with your same age group. And lots of those lads will be released and a big percentage of them will disappear and give up football because they'll be burnt out having banged their head for 10 years. But there will be a percentage of them will fall into non-league. Non-league will pick them up, dust them down, introduce them to real football and men's football and first team football, which is the pinnacle to play in anyone's first team because that's what the club is about. No matter what anyone says, yes, you need an infrastructure. Yes, you need people coming through, but it is judged on what the first team do. Play in the first team and you know it's real and they will get back in love with football and they'll go again and they'll get their second chance in the pro game. And I see a lot of that happening now. If I was back in management, I would be looking a lot more to the younger lads who got released, who have hunger, than the older senior lads on their way out. In just my personal opinion, you do need a balance in your team and squad. But I do think there's going to be a lot of good players who have been released by pro clubs, Tim, who will be out there to be brought in and sort of given a second go.
Well, I'm certainly scouring for them already. So looking to bring a few older heads already. One last quick mention of someone else, another manager that's been on the show many times. Alex Pike has gone back to the new look Gosport. I mean, Alex synonymous with Gosport, really, you know, having taken them up all the way through the leagues, and then they obviously had their financial issues. They've got these two new guys in Selstrom, obviously looked after them from the summer, and they've managed to get rid of their transfer embargo. You know, they've sorted themselves out financially, I think, got certainly keeping the creditors at bay. And now they've got Ian McInnes and Ray Stainton come in, who are formerly at Portsmouth and turned their fortunes around. And the first move they've made is to bring Alex Pike back in to try and make sure that they finish second from bottom at the very least in that division so that they don't get relegated and they can build again for next season. Is that a surprise that they brought Alex back for you?
Is it a surprise Alex came back?
That, you know, he was, you know, he's probably got Gosport written through him. He was literally, you know, certainly 18 months ago when I last had a proper long chat with him, he was literally doing everything at the club, you know, trying to make sure that it was staying on its feet. And then he was let go. I'm not quite sure what he was doing in between. We're going to try and get someone from Gosport on in the coming weeks. But yeah, that was the thing that for me, it was a bit of a surprise that he even went back there. But I think really Gosport is his side. So, you know, It's one of those things that they come to you.
Yeah, no, listen, you'd have to say that the work that's been done so far is good. It's turning the club around into the right direction again. They've dealt with all sorts of nonsense, for want of a better description. And what they're trying to do now is probably just get a calmness and a stability, which we talk about all the time. And, you know, if you, familiarity can work, you know, because in all the chaos that's been going around the club in the last sort of 4 or 5 months with all this going on, always coming back in is a familiar face, understands the club, the supporters, you know, what's expected, probably more so than the people who have taken the club over. So I would understand, that they would go and get Alex. And as we've said, doesn't need to be described to anyone. We all know where his heart is, and it's at Gosport Borough because of the work he's done previously. So I would understand them. And I think that's intelligent and it makes sense. I'd like to ask Alex, you know, how the conversation went, because I'm a bit more cynical than Alex. I'd be going, okay, why do you want me? What's this about? How long's it for? You know, and where are we going with it? Maybe he's asked all those questions. I'd like to find out. But I do think it is a clever decision, and makes sense because it brings a calmness and a stability about a football club that is, to be fair, it looks like they're turning the corner, you know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they get on, and you know, only one going down out of that division this season. So if ever there was a season to build, I suppose this is it, isn't it? As long as they can finish, they're not detached either at the bottom, so it should be quite easy for them if they can pull themselves, get a couple of results, and then start building for next season, maybe.
Yes, and that'll be what it's about. It'll be can you get us sort of safe. And that's why I'm saying, that's why Alex and me should be asking the questions of, you know, what happens if it doesn't happen? What happens if it does happen? You know, I'd want it in writing about exactly what's expected of me and what I get when I deliver what's expected of me. But if I was a betting man, and I'm not because I'm rubbish at it, I would say that they stand a good chance because he's a man that understands the football club and the division and the area. And, you know, with only one gun down, it gives you a big chance. Although he'll want to close that gap as quickly as he can, you know, and get himself up within safety, you know.
Okay, so it's FA Vars weekend and the last 32. 16 ties as clubs battle for a step nearer non-league finals day at Wembley and that £1,875 in prize money. With more wet weather and some northerly cold winds expected coming into the weekend, non-league groundsmen will be working their hardest to make sure they get these games on. One game we hope will beat the weather is Newcastle Benfield v Coalfield Town. And manager Mark Convery of Newcastle Benfield joins us on the line to tell us what the chances are. Mark, welcome to the Non-League Football Show.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having us on.
So what is the chance of this game going ahead at Sam Smith Park this weekend?
I mean, there's a little bit of standing water on the pitch as we speak, which the groundsman's looking to get it rolled and get it forked sometime today. So hopefully that'll take that away, and then it'll be a case of taking a view tomorrow on it to try and allow Coalfield, you know, a bit of time before they set off on that journey.
And obviously, looking at the weather forecast as well, you know, hopefully the you'll be able to beat the rain element. But, I mean, even if this game goes ahead, it's going to be cold up there. Have you got an extra bench kit to wear?
To be honest, it's nothing new to us up here. It's kind of something we deal with week in, week out, whether it's the summer or the winter.
With so many games already lost recently as well, you know, through the weather, do you prepare differently for a big game like this, you know, particularly when it's going to be played in possibly difficult conditions?
I guess we prepare as we would for any game. Obviously, in the back of our head, we know the prize and the Vars. Is a chance to play at Wembley, you know, it's a great opportunity for the lads. So, but for me, from the managerial side, I try and keep everything as normal as possible. We'll will train my normal 1-2 times a week. And the there's nothing special that we're going to do anything. It'll just be sort of business as usual.
Now, and as a club, you're relatively young. I think founded in 1988. But with yourself and Paul Brayson at the club, there's plenty of football experience and know-how there. Is it games like these that knowledge and history of the game pays its extra rewards?
Yeah, I mean, you would like to think that it's myself and Paul have put a lot of hard yards and years into the game, you know, with our careers. Obviously, Paul's still playing and doing a really good job of that. But you like to think although it might give you the edge, I think it just prepares you. We've been in these positions before. We've both been involved in big games. So from my side, all I'll be trying to do is treat it as normal as possible and make sure the guys don't freeze on the day. You know, it is literally treat as another game.
Obviously you say about your own career, I mean you keep that a bit quiet, but I mean it's quite a decent career in non-league as well. Any FA Cup exploits during that time?
Yeah, well, I had some a decent run with a couple of clubs. Probably the one more of note was my time at Cambridge United. We managed to get to, I think it was the fourth round, and we played Wolves at Molineux. So we went 1-0 up, so we're kind of dead to dream. But I think Wolves just turned up the heat in the second half and was on the day. You know, that kind of the higher league position, I guess, showed in the overall 90 minutes. But it was, you know, it was a great experience going and playing at Molineux with a decent crowd. And again, the FA Cup, you know, it's a great competition to be a part of.
So with the FA Vars this weekend being the same weekend as the FA Cup third round, are you able to sort of pull some of that magic and sort of, you know, throw that back at the players to inspire them? As you say, you've got Wembley at the end there. You know, this is their big chance.
Yeah, I guess it is. But it's also getting the balance right between, you know, not looking too far ahead. Yes, Wembley is the end goal, but there's a hell of a lot of football to be played between these rounds and who gets to Wembley. So for me, basically, as I keep saying, it is a case of, in my eyes, yes, it's a cup game. Yes, it's a knockout competition. But, you know, we'll be addressing it like we do any other game. We'll always go out to win the game. We don't have any negative thoughts in any part of the squad or any part of our tactics that will go into games. So for me, it is a case of just keeping the lads' minds on the job, and the job is, it's a game, it's going to be 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon, and the end goal is to get the win.
And you mentioned the word goal there. Is having someone like Paul Brayson on your team sheet, you know, he clearly knows where the goal is. I think, was it 49 goals? I seem to remember reporting a few seasons ago back in one season. You know, for these cup games where one chance might be all you can get, is it a bonus to have him there? That you know that if he gets a chance, it's more likely to be taken.
It is. I think it's the kind of player that every manager, no matter what league, what level you play at, you need a goal scorer, because otherwise all the other good play kind of goes unnoticed at times, because you need to finish off the moves, you need to finish off the chances you create, which then gives an overall, you know, better view of the game, which he's done more often than not for not just us throughout his career. So it gives, I think, the lads around him the confidence to know, yes, they might have to do a bit extra running and supply the chances for him, but they know if they do that and they're prepared to put that extra work in, then if he does get a chance, more often than not, the outcome is a goal, which is a great lift for the full team.
So league-wise, you're Northern League Division 1, and I've seen the marketing as Newcastle's premier non-league side, which I love. And, you know, the North East is such a hotbed for football at non-league level at the moment. We seem to report on North East clubs, you know, almost every week. But does having that closer connection, even in name alone, with Newcastle as a city, does that help you bring in new players and bring in fans?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's probably the closest thing these non-league players are going to get to seeing the play for Newcastle, although it's slightly bending the truth, I suppose. But it does. I mean, the name Newcastle is recognised worldwide, so the fact that we're going to share that name with you know, a Premier League team such as Newcastle United, it is a pull. And like you say, locally, we have a lot of local lads playing for us now, which we kind of didn't have when I took over. And for me, that's a big pull, because it gives that little bit extra to the guys who are involved. You know, they live in the area, they feel, you know, the success, if you get it, the, you know, people talk about you around the doors, which feeds into the club. And, you know, if Newcastle United aren't at home, it would do tend to see a bit of an uplift in the crowd, you know, on a Saturday. So it's a, you know, it's a good place to be and a good place to play your football.
I saw a retweet earlier on Twitter from Alan Shearer himself. You know, it's good to have fans like that out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's to be honest, we're trying to build the club, you know, from internally every sort of aspect possible. So we have a media team now who are, you know, social media plays a big part in the game. So it means you can reach out to these people, like to your Alan Shearers, yeah. Ex-footballers, yeah, current footballers, you know, and the fact they can take time out that day and put a tweet mentioning our game is, you know, it's massive. Obviously, the followers they have, it could potentially put 50-100 people extra on the gate, which for non-league clubs, as you know, following non-league football, then, you know, that's a really, really big thing for teams in this division.
Mm. You mentioned, you know, Yeah, since you've come in, you've changed the way that you select your players, maybe from more locally, you know, things going on behind the scenes. I've certainly sort of, yeah, I've been drawn to things that are going on at Newcastle Benfield, because you seem to be doing it all in the right way, you know, as a unit, and everybody's pulling in the same direction. And quite often we hear in non-league, you know, little politics going on, that sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, there may be some there, and, you know, not everybody always gets on all the time, but it does seem that you're really gelled together and moving forward as a club.
We are, and I mean, for me, stuff I've drawn on throughout my career is there needs to be a culture at any club that you're at, whether it's Sunday League football up to Premier League, and everybody needs to be coming from the same place. That, like you explained there, you can't have little groups who've got different agendas and stuff. And for me, as a club sitting at the head of the sort of playing staff side of it, if that was the case, then them type of characters wouldn't be at the club, because I think team spirit and morale and everything can take you a long way. We're fortunate that we've got a good committee there behind us who understand this is what we're trying to do. There's a lot of people give up time and put a lot of effort into stuff, and you know, it's all voluntary work, and from the groundsman, you know, to the social media team, to even coaches and physios at the club, it's getting that right type of character that fits in. And again, I can only see positive things happen. It might take a little bit longer on the pitch to get it right, but we're certainly going in the right direction.
And so FA VAR's the focus this weekend. What about the league and the season as a whole? What are your aims there?
I mean, we set out at the start of the season. I had some lengthy meetings with, you know, the committee, the chairman, the vice chairman, if you like, and then also held meetings with the team as a squad. And basically, we wanted to win something this season. That is our goal. The league possibly is going to be too much of a stretch forward in terms of, we have targeted the cup competitions as being a number one priority. I feel at times my league form's kind of hit a bit of a lull at times with concentrating on the cup. But as a group, as a club, this is what we're set out to do. So, I mean, so far this season, we've done great. We've had a good run in the FA Cup, which has brought in extra revenue. And in terms of the League Cup, the Northumberland Senior Cup and the VARs, we're still in all of them. So, my goal as a club was to win something. So we've still got three chances to do that, which is always a good thing to see coming out of the Christmas period, because previous seasons we've kind of been out of all cup competitions by November, December, which then, you know, the back part of the season, it seems to be a bit of a struggle, you know.
Well, it certainly sounds like you know, things are on the up for the club. Appreciate you taking time to talk to us, Mark, and wish you well in getting the game on, and then wish you well in getting the result as well on Saturday. That's Newcastle Benfield against Coleshill Town. Thanks again, Mark, and best of luck for the season.
Great, Tim. Thank you.
So Newcastle Benfield against Coleshill Town, just one of the 16 ties being played this weekend in the FA VAR. Well, hopefully being played if the weather sorts itself out. There's a live commentary from that game at Newcastle Benfield from our partners Live Sports FM on Saturday afternoon. If you can't make the game, hopefully that will be on. And more to come from the FA Vars. Okay, so it's a big weekend for Cubs competing in the FA Vars fourth round, who can see a potential trip to Wembley on their radar. A new year, new club, so after Newcastle Benfield, where next? But the south of the country, in Newport, Isle of Wight. Currently 20th in the Wessex Premier League, but a club with some pedigree in this competition, having reached the fifth round in both 1991-92 season and 92-93. So how important is this game for a club like Newport, Isle of Wight? Hopefully Chairman Stuart Ross can explain. Good evening, Stuart.
Good evening, Tim.
So, fourth round proper. You've got Bradford Town heading your way from Wiltshire on Saturday. So, quite a journey for this time. What chance the game will be on with the current weather?
Yeah, big occasion for us, and hoping it's the game's going to be on. We are subject to a pitch inspection at St George's Park at 3:30 tomorrow, Friday. So, fingers crossed the pitch has dried out a bit and the game will be on Saturday.
And so, yeah, for maybe some people that don't know, well, I'm not an immediate local, but I could probably throw a stone over to the Isle of Wight from where I live. But you know, how does being on the island affect a club like you? You're chairman of a club, but you know, it must be travel issues, must be attracting players, even sponsorship and things like that. Is it difficult being on the island?
I think it is a little bit more difficult than those teams, non-league teams at sort of our level. We are subject to sort of a catchment area of the Isle of Wight only, but we do attract players from the mainland. We currently have one player this season who travels from the Bournemouth area, but he is a local lad anyway, from the island, so knows it very well. But yes, we do suffer sometimes of attracting those players, but our squad that we've got at the moment is very strong, local lads, and well up for Saturday's game.
And does that then, because they're all local, does that help you create a bond? And, you know, do you feel more as a unit as a club than, you know, maybe some of the other clubs you play against? And it's a very competitive league, the Wessex League. But do you feel more as a unit, as maybe like a family?
Yeah, we are a very close-knit community, particularly obviously living on the Isle of Wight, but our club, we're a very local community club, and our players are bonded, as you say, to Newport Football Club, and very committed. And once they're at the club, they're here for many years. And we've got players, the likes of our captain, Harry Streeter, who's been at the club for the past 9 years, a very good goalkeeper, and competes in the Wessex Premier Division, and one of the best keepers in the league. So we can produce that sort of level of player locally. As I say, we do attract the odd player here and there, but mainly it's from our local lads across the Isle of Wight.
Dave Anderson, I think you've got a question.
Yeah, no, to be fair, Stuart, I've been to Newport twice. I was there when I managed AFC Wimbledon. I always remember these things. We played a midweek game, and my kit man, who was a mate of mine, who was filling in, lost the key to the dressing room. So we were trying to get back in the dressing room after the game, and we couldn't. And we're the boat to catch, as you can imagine. And the other time I went with Windsor and Eton, we were on our way back, and the coach driver got lost on the Isle of Wight. Which is sort of sticks with me in my head, you know. It's like, but question to you is that, you know, you're in the Wessex sort of Premier now. I think when I played against you at Wimbledon, it would have been the Ryman Division One. Where do you feel? What's your capacity as a football club? How high do you feel the club could stray to?
Well, yeah, we sit in the currently sit in the Wessex Premier Division at the moment. We have been a few seasons back, up to the Southern Premier, and that's the highest that we've got. We are in a situation at the moment where we have to, leave St George's Park, and that'll be this year. But I've worked tirelessly, over the last, 16 months to secure a new home for Newport Football Club, which is, half a mile-ish, down the road, but within the Newport boundary. We're having a new club built, which is fantastic, because there's been a lot of uncertainty, our club, over a number of years as to where we're going to move on. And once we're at that new club, we have a vision. We have a vision and a plan for the next 5 to 7 years. And when we get there, we're going to have a nice new ground at ground grading D, so we can play up to step 4 in the national pyramid. And we're hoping to go further from there. We want to step back into the Southern League, because that's where we feel we belong. and we're going to try and push on through the non-league system as far as we can go. Ultimately, we'd like to see ourselves in 5 years, seven time playing in the National League, which would be fantastic.
Excellent. And maybe just for the people who listen, Stuart, you know, how difficult is it with your travel? Because away trips, you know, if you're traveling, you have to get the last boat back, sort of that situation. Or have you got that sussed out now? That's easy for you.
Yeah, I think every away fixture is what we call it, as an away fixture. Every we have to go on a bus or a coach, a ferry, maybe sometimes even a minibus. But yeah, we have got that down to a T. We're very fortunate that we've got our local ferry companies that sponsor us as a football club, and lots of local businesses sponsor us here on the Isle of Wight. And it sort of goes back to the close-knit community that we are on the Isle of Wight, and we're supported locally by those people. So yes, we have got it down to a T. Every journey is a little bit longer for us. We start early and come home late, but it's a commitment from our lads, and they put the effort in. They want to be there. They want to put that yellow jersey on every Saturday, and they're there. And although the days are a little bit longer for us, we thoroughly enjoy our journeys and our journey within the Wessex Premier Division at the moment.
Yeah, sure. Last one for me. Obviously, going back to the VAS, you know, I'd imagine your manager trying to get some scouting reports. I suppose he has contacts he can go to. Getting scouting reports a little bit more difficult. But Bradford Town, the fact that you've got the tie when you play at home, that must be big. As much as going away is difficult, home ties, I would think, if I was managing you, I'd be thinking this is going to be a fortress, because it is a long journey. It's a different journey. You know, I remember when I went there, the support was quite good, your local support. Can you really take this on? Can you get yourselves to Wembley?
I think you have to set yourself the expectations high and go for it. Wembley's five games away from us. Yes, we've got to get through Saturday. Bradford Town are making a long journey. I think their travels start about 8 o'clock in the morning. But we've been very fortunate during our FA VARS draws that we've been away once during that time. So, and that was the Christchurch in the last round. So we would take the advantage of having a home tie. Bradford sit third in their the Tool Station Premier Division, which is an equal league to us. I think it'll be a very good tie. Yeah. I don't think there'll be much in it, but we fancy ourselves. We've got that home advantage. And as you say, we get a lot of local support, and we're expecting a lot of local support, as well as I know Bradford Town are also bringing a lot of support for their team. So it should be a great atmosphere in St George's Park on Saturday if we can get the game on. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's a big occasion for Newport Football Club.
No, Tim. It sounds, and I'm finished here, but I just want to wish you good luck with the new ground. It sounds fantastic. You know, I have great memories of your ground as it is now, but I wish you all the best.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, and same for me, Stuart. All I was going to say, you know, you saying about the local support that you'll get and the Bradford Town are bringing, that's the magic of the FA VARS, isn't it? That, you know, it gives you that opportunity to really, you know, get the local area behind you, and you know, and that chance for Wembley. You know, any club that I've had contact with that have got to the FA VARS final, you know, almost the whole town closes down, the whole region closes down, and I can imagine, you know, maybe even the ferries might shut down on the Isle of Wight that weekend if you got through to the VARS final.
Yeah, as I say, this is a big occasion for our football club, but it is a big occasion for football across the Isle of Wight. We've got a football family here. We've got many local teams here on the Isle of Wight, but Newport Football Club is the biggest football club, no shadow of a doubt. And I don't say that being biased, but it is, and it has been for a number of years. And we want our locals to come and support us. And if we progress into the next round, which we were there in the 2012-13 season, but unfortunately we lost away to Ascot United in a replay. So we've been in the fifth round and we've been there twice previous to that. So we want to get through. We've got that home advantage and we're looking forward to sending Bradford back home defeated. And we're in that draw on Monday afternoon.
Well, best of luck from all of us, Stuart, and we look forward to talking to you. If not this, hopefully for later on in the season for the FA VARS run, but certainly when that new ground comes about, and I'm looking forward to a trip already.
Yeah, excellent. Look forward to welcoming you to the Isle of Wight.
Thank you very much, Stuart. Cheers.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Stuart.
Take care. Bye.
Dave, a nice town from, again, a very calm chairman. He's got a big game ahead of the weekend. He's managed to sort out a new ground. You know, it can happen in non-league, can't it?
Sounds as if he's done magnificent work. You know, sounds very in control of it. And, you know, if you're working for a chairman that's doing that off the pitch, you feel obligated to perform on it, you know. But I have to tell you that I remember going there with Wimbledon, and I know we've got a minute, that one of my mates from Belfast who lives over here wanted to go to the game, but obviously travelling the Isle of Wight's a little bit difficult. So I managed to drag him onto the Wimbledon team bus as a sort of helper, kit man helper, which got him access to the change room area. And I said, look, stay in there, out of the way, you know, help the lads when they need it, but, you know, just don't do anything stupid. And he went, no, fine. And at half time, when it finished the team talk, the lads went out, and I gave him the stopwatch. I said, start, press that button when it kicks off. I'm just going to go to the toilet. So I went to the toilet, locked the dressing room door, which would happen a lot. The hitman would look after that. Got to the dugout, give him the key, got the stopwatch. At the end of the game, did he get that key? What key? I went, I'll give you the key. And he went, I don't have it. And now, with Wimbledon, we had about 600 or 700 supporters now standing around singing, and the lads want to get in and get showered to get home. We've got them on their hands and knees around the dugout trying to find this key, and it was just one of the, I was just, when I look back on it now, and what it was, he had a hole in his tracksuit pocket, and the key had fallen out, and I went, sacked. You'll never ever be in my dressing room again. So that was Rogie's call. That's Rogie's claim to fame. So I had to tell the story, and it's absolutely true. We still laugh about it to this day, you know.
It's one and only job, though, and it was an international, technically, wasn't it? So, you know, it's not bad to bow out of the top.
Yeah, not bad. But I have very good memories of Newport Isle of Wight. And the other thing I remember about both times I went with Windsor as well, is the atmosphere in the ground. It was an old non-league ground, good atmosphere, you know, always had a good support, and was always a challenge to go there, because the boys think it's an away day, and you have to get their head off that and onto the, like, this is a proper game. So I wish them well, and it'd be interesting. I'd love to go and see the new ground when it's open, but great story if they were to get to Wembley, wouldn't it? What a great story that would be.
It would be, and hopefully we can be there too. Now, this weekend is the big one. It's the FA Cup third round. The Globes' attention turns to the most prestigious competition in football. Unfortunately, this season, we have no non-league representatives to grace the world stage. That's not to say it's not been a great season for the non-league clubs in the greatest competition of them all. And our final guest will testify. Clayton and provider of FA Cup stats extraordinaire, Mr. Philinette at FA Cup Backbar, joins us to announce the winners of this season's FA Cup Team Awards, celebrating the magic of the FA Cup this season from a non-league perspective. Welcome, Phil.
Hello, Tim. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well. And now, remind us what the factors are all about.
Yeah, the factors have been set up to recognise the contributions of non-league clubs in the FA Cup. Obviously, the winners and those that get to the final and the latter stages get all the publicity. But the non-league clubs have a large part to play in the makeup of the FA Cup. And I think it's right and proper that we recognise the successes of those clubs. And despite the fact that collectively they've not had a fantastic year in terms of reaching the third round, there have been some wonderful individual club performances.
Yeah, and it's been great that everybody has sort of come together with the factors as well. You've had some great votes, some nominations, and then voting. How successful has the factors been this year?
Well, the FA Cup Team Awards this year have really grabbed the imagination of the non-league community, and I've been really pleased with the interaction of people in the voting process. And there's been over 5,000 votes cast, and that was during a period of New Year when everyone else's attention was on something else and other things. And so it's been wonderful to see the involvement and the interest in these factor awards.
And so there were the four factors that were voted on, and we'll come to those in a minute. But there was a fifth one as well, which I think you'd like to start with, the Friend of Non-League FA Cup Team Award.
Yeah, this is an occasional award that is created to recognise the support of Football League clubs for the non-league community. And this season there was one perfect example of where a non-league club was well supported by a league club. In the case of Milton Keynes Dons, they faced Hyde United in the FA Cup. You may remember that game was on TV. And in that game, there was some flares thrown, and the Hyde United 4G pitch was damaged in the process. And following the game, Milton Keynes Dons fans have got together and have collected over £1,000 to go towards the cost of repairing of that 4G pitch. So I think that's a wonderful example of how a Football League club can support a non-league community. And so the worthy winners of this year's Friend of Non-League Factor goes to Milton Keynes Dons.
Yeah, and a great example of what the FA Cup's all about as well, isn't it? It's about the non-league clubs and the professional clubs coming together and enjoying the game of football.
Yes, it is, yeah. And we see lots of examples of that. And, you know, the non-league world is seemingly where there's a lot more passion for the FA Cup. But it's fair to say that, in particularly in the EFL and EFL2 clubs, there's also a large degree of passion for the FA Cup. And it's great when you see the two worlds come together, as we did in that match earlier this season.
So, talking about the passion of the FA Cup, then, let's start with the first factor, the special team award, FA Cup Team Award. Now, this recognises the club going above and beyond to really show what the FA Cup means. Three nominees in this category: 1874 Northwich, AFC Mansfield and Hereford. Who was the winner of the Special Team Award then, Phil?
Well, this year, all three of those nominees would be worthy winners and have all produced excellent contributions to what the FA Cup is all about. But this year's winner of the Special Team Award Factor goes to Hereford FC. Their fans went above and beyond the call of duty, if you like, by clearing the snow off their pitch ahead of the Plum FA Cup replay against Fleetwood Town in the second round. I think that showed excellent commitment from the fans to ensure that that game went ahead and the pitch was in great condition for the game. And so Hereford are worthy winners of the Special Team Factor Award.
Yeah, a great award to recognise, you know, the difficulties that non-league clubs have, because, you know, in a professional club, you know, maybe they would have had, you know, 20 staff or something that could have cleared that. You know, I'm not sure how many full-time staff Hereford have within the whole setup, but without those fans, that game just simply wouldn't have gone ahead, would it?
Well, that's right. It would have been a missed opportunity in terms of the income, etc., from the TV showing. But yeah, these awards aren't just about performances on the pitch. They are designed to recognise the clubs as a whole and the non-league community as a whole. And so that's a great example of the club and the fans coming together to make sure that the game went ahead.
Well, one of those awards that is about the exploits on the pitch is the second award, the surprise of the FA Cup factor. So this is the one that actually recognises clubs that had maybe an unexpected result, performance, great cup run. Four nominees here. We've got Guiseley, Hereford again, Leatherhead and Shaw Lane Association. And who were the winners in the surprise of the FA Cup factor, Phil?
Yeah, this was a great example of clubs achieving more than people might have expected. Either getting to a round much further than they've done before, or in the case of Shaw Lane Association, winning twice as many games this season as they've ever won before in the FA Cup. But the actual winner of the Surprise of the Cup Factor Award goes to Hereford FC again, this time for achieving the 1-1 draw at Fleetwood Town in the first match in the second round. Fleetwood Town are playing four levels above Hereford, so any club that can go to a team four levels above and come away with a draw is going to cause a surprise. And so this year, Hereford are the worthy winners of Surprise of the Cup Factor.
And we said this one's about the exploits on the field, but I mean that it's those sort of results that make it special to be a non-league fan, doesn't it? They're the days that you do it for, aren't they?
Very much so. I mean, you want that moment in the sun, that opportunity to pit your team's capabilities against those that you recognise week in, week out from the TV in terms of higher league opposition. And we all remember the big cup upsets of the past. Obviously, Hereford, a great name in terms of FA Cup history in the past. And so, you know, it's the one we all look forward to, that opportunity to see our local club take on the big boys.
And let's move on to the third award, the Performance of the Cup Factor. Now, this recognises clubs with an outstanding single performance, maybe a cup set, a comeback win, large margin of victory, and there are plenty of nominees in this one because obviously it goes across the whole of the cup competition there. So nominees there, we've got 1874 Northwich, Berkhamsted Town, City of Liverpool, Oxford City, Shildon, Slough Town, South Shields and Woking. Who were the winners of the performance of the Cup Factor, Phil?
Yeah, this was the most closely contested of all the voted for factors, and every one of these eight clubs had a fantastic single performance in this year's FA Cup. It was a very close call between two clubs in the end. In second place was City of Liverpool with their fantastic 8-2 victory over Prescott Cables. But the winner this year of the performance of the Cup Factor goes to Woking for their wonderful 3-0 win at EFL Wanside Bury. That 3-0 win for Woking represents a record FA Cup margin of victory for them over a league club. And so it's a fantastic, worthy winners of the performance of the Cup this year.
Yeah, were the winners. And there was one of the big FA Cup stories, really, but never really got the national coverage that really such a victory should have got. You know, like maybe if it was later on in the FA Cup, maybe it might have got more coverage. But it was a massive result for Woking.
Yeah, it's a fantastic result. And I think because they're a National League side and Bury was struggling at the bottom of EFL One, maybe in the eyes of the look at only the league football, so it wasn't really that much of a surprise. But actually, Woking had to work extremely hard to win on that game 3-0. It's a fantastic result and a fantastic performance. And shouldn't be underestimated how much they had to do to make that happen.
And so great and worthy winners. Now the final award, number four, Team of the Cup Factor, recognises the non-league club with the biggest positive impact on the FA Cup this season. Now that's probably what this whole thing's all about, isn't it? Really, the factors. Four nominees in this category: Hereford again, Heybridge Swifts, Leatherhead, and Truro City. So who were the big winners of the Team of the Cup Factor?
Yeah, this is the big award of the Factor Awards, and again, all four clubs who have been nominated all undertook some fantastic performances in the FA Cup and really stood out for what they achieved, either whether they were achieving their best ever run or, like in the case of Truro, being the first team from Cornwall in almost 50 years to make the first round. But this year's winner, and they seem to be winning everything this year, is Hereford FC. They're the team of the Cup in terms of non-league performances in the FA Cup this year. They reached the second round. They started off in the first qualifying round, six rounds previously back in September, and this is just their second campaign. So it's a fantastic year for them in the FA Cup, and they're well-deserved winners of the Team of the Cup Factor this year.
And almost ironic that, you know, we get to the third round of the FA Cup, no non-league representatives this time round, but a name synonymous with the third round of the FA Cup, Hereford, winning pretty much, winning three of the Factor Awards and just really emphasising what the FA Cup's all about.
Yeah, it's the first time in the years that I've been running these awards that any one club has won more than one award. So it really is excellent for Hereford that they've been recognised across the board on the three awards that they were nominated for. And it is great to hear such an illustrious name, well remembered in the past in the FA Cup with their exploits as Hereford United beating Newcastle, Ronnie Radford and all that. So, you know, it's third round weekend this weekend and everybody remembers those wonderful non-league cup shops in Hereford right at the top of that list.
And so, I mean, that, from non-league, that's sort of that's the end of our season with you, Phil. But I'm sure you continue to be busy through all the way through to the final, don't you?
Yeah, the FA Cup fat file doesn't stop really until the end of the FA Cup final itself. So whilst it's a shame there are no non-league clubs left in the competition this year, there's still a lot of activity and a lot of potential upsets that can still happen, and you know, I'm still undertaking analysis across the board and looking forward to seeing the competition reach its conclusion.
And that FA Cup final, have you had a letter from the Palace? I didn't see you mentioning the New Year's honours, so I'm guessing that you're going to get the FA Cup final ticket that Prince William can't take, is that right?
Yeah, unlike Prince William, I'm not first in line for anything. I'm not second in line for anything. No, I don't think I'm going to get to use his ticket. I might get his place at the wedding, but no, it's it'd be nice to get to the final. Hopefully, William can make both events at the end of in May. But whatever happens, it should be hopefully a good game.
Well, thanks again for all your input throughout the season, Phil. I'm sure we'll talk again very soon, and wish you well for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Tim. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for the support for the factors. Well done to not just the winners, but also to all the clubs who were nominated. All have achieved excellent performances this year in the Cup, and any one of them could have been winners this year.
Well, that's it for this week already. Thanks again, Dave, for your time and your insights.
Pleasure. And, absolute pleasure, Tim.
Thanks again to all our guests, and of course to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out www.nonleaguefootballshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player. Happy New Year to everybody. Thank you and goodbye.
Double B A J A double B A.